Hola, everybody. This is Lucilania.
Hey, what's up? This is Steph coming at you live.
And this is Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy Podcast. Welcome to the third episode of the new year, and as we all often do in to some degree or another, I was scrolling on the Book of Faces, and I came across a thread that actually originated from Twitter from the lovely Reina Noriega that was really, really amazing, and so we're going to talk about it, Steph and I, and just get into it, because she really dropped some gems. But obviously it's Twitter, so there's only but so much that she can say, even though it's a pretty lengthy thread. But I think she gave us a good foundation to really have an even more in-depth conversation. And so Reina, and that's actually her Twitter name. If you want to follow her, absolutely. It's Reina, Reyna Sonoriega. And if you're watching this on YouTube, it'll be somewhere on the screen. Right down there. If you're not watching this on YouTube, hopefully you remind that and you wrote it down, or you pulled out your phone and you looked it up if you're still on Twitter, because I don't know how many people are on Twitter anymore. I gave up Twitter a long time ago. So she writes, and this is actually from October of 2022. I'm just now seeing it for the first time. And she says, when getting in relationships, which are completely voluntary, do we not find it bizarre that at times people choose not to give their partners the things that make them feel loved and safe? Now, before we go on, I'm going to stop there, because that's a really good place to pause. Because I got thoughts, I got feelings. Because immediately what kind of triggers for me is, especially as a survivor of domestic violence and narcissistic abuse, is how often, especially in those relationships, like choosing not to give your partner those things often becomes a weapon in those kind of relationships. That it's not even just, like, I think there are levels to it, that it's still wrong and unhealthy. That, like, why are you in a relationship and this person is saying, I need this, I want this? And there's a difference between not being able to and just not choosing to.
Yeah.
And then you go to the more sinister route, where it's a big difference between not wanting to and not choosing to, and then using it against them. Where it's like neglect, when you're dealing with neglect, like one of the things that kind of blew my mind was realizing that neglect as a child from your parent is a form of emotional abuse. And I imagine to a certain extent, like withholding, I think, you know, which is, I think is more of the term, like withholding in intimate relationships often is and can be at least a sign of abuse, if not abusive. I wanted to point that out, because we want to be able to have that nuanced conversation and really identify the difference between when people are doing it and it's abusive versus people doing it and it be unhealthy.
Yeah. And there's so many dynamics involved in that. And so it's not just an easy conversation that you could just have with somebody and hope that they get it. There's a lot that you have to know about both yourself and that person. Mm. And so when you don't do your homework, in a sense, and understand how that person perceives their own notions of love, safety, boundaries, and the impact it has on them and their relationships, you're already talking about apples and oranges, or grapes, or whatever fruit that you like. And so, like you, when I thought about this and I looked at the topic, it was like, wow, like, even in my own life, I can think about the times when what I believe to be my safety or safe place, or the way that I feel like I should be loved, may have not always been communicated in a way that actually gave my partner, my wife, the opportunity to actually do it, right? And again, even if I say the words, that still doesn't mean that I've actually communicated the real meaning behind it. Because we can say stuff all the time, but still not get our point across. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's a good segue into the next part of the thread, because she goes in to say, I see too many people try to negotiate people's non-negotiables, circumvent boundaries that exist so that person feels at peace, love, safe. What is the reason? Besides the fact that as humans, we can be selfish by nature, but what joy can you get from seeing your flower wilt because you aren't caring for it properly?
That's deep.
Yeah, because I it's like that whole being able to identify as people, as humans, that we have a selfish nature, without being, you know, anthropologist or whatever you need to be to kind of talk about this from like a historical perspective, I imagine in my intelligent mind that selfish nature really was out of a means of protection and self-preservation, which I think a lot of our more like baser kind of, that's a word, did I use that right? More, you know, this kind of raw kind of things that's coming from that it's you know, like the idea of fight or flight, like we get really fearful and our body doesn't know the difference between actual life or death or what we're feeling, and that we have to be the ones to tell our bodies, like, I know you're feeling, what you're feeling is similar to whether or not a rhino is chasing me, but my life isn't actually in danger right now. Although it feels like it's in danger, it's not. And so I know and can imagine, like, being in relationships and being a lover girl, as they say on TikTok, that oftentimes, like, there's the idea that we think, or we want to think, that we are meeting that person's needs. And then there's a disconnect because either you have someone who is communicating and you're not hearing and or understanding, or you have someone who isn't communicating in a way, like maybe they're not verbally communicating. They're communicating in other ways, which we also kind of, if you're in a relationship, you should be sensitive to all of those things. But then, you know, I know people who be like, look, you gonna have to talk directly to me. Like, I know, I can see that something is going on. But
even,
you
gotta talk to, but even that,
otherwise, which I can understand, because I there's a, for me, it's shaded differently now that I know that I'm autistic, because and have ADHD, and because of my ADHD also have struggled with rejection sensitivity dysphoria, and I'm super empathetic. So I've had to learn how to kind of balance it a little bit better, because I'm already really sensitive to people's emotions and the shifts, and it could be nothing about me and I literally rabbit hole into the worst possible scenario, or I could be right. And if you live in that place of anxiety all the time, you're gonna be right sometimes. When you're wrong, you're like really wrong. You know, so I mean, there's a lot of craziness when you think about it, in how many ways we can approach it. But then again, then you just have those people who just, I think what she's describing are those people who want to be in relationships but have no desire to give to that relationship.
Well, the interesting thing was the fact that she said, you know, for those who go into the relationship voluntarily, right? Which for me is like kind of a jab, because I think that people going into a relationship that are conscious of the relationship are going into it expecting it to work out, right? At least for the most part, they know that something may not work out with them and that person, but I'm not going in saying, hey, I'm only gonna be with you for like 3 weeks and I'm gonna treat you like trash for those 3 weeks. Because, you know, no, I think the voluntarily part is the fact that there is a choice in going into the relationship, but that still doesn't mean that from that choice, we're still on the same page. And thinking from a God's perspective, we all know that men and women communicate differently. Right. And looking at it from the perspective of, you know, potentially a guy who thinks about his needs, right? And the place that he's safe, that may not even exist, right? You know, depending on how a guy is brought up, because again, every guy is brought up differently, but there is a tendency where we're put on as the responsibility of creating the safe space, being the security, being the one that can provide shelter from whatever ails that individual, and then only to find that when we need it, we don't even know that we even need it, one. And then two, how does that even come across as asking for the need? So I think that for this person who puts that quote out there, I get what they're saying in a sense, but then it also makes me question, like, it gives me an idea of their attitude behind this, just in their language of the question. And that can create some distance between them and somebody else.
Yeah, and for me, when I read that, I thought it was really really smart of her to use that language, because we want to differentiate between not all relationships, because not all relationships are voluntary, i.e. parent and child. That child did not voluntarily enter into a relationship with their parent. They came here, they didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And so it's very different, and it's not that there's no, and there shouldn't be, I'll say that, there shouldn't be an expectation of equal reciprocity between a parent and child in the way where she's talking about someone choosing in the voluntary relationship that we're getting in. And, I mean, of course, like what I'll get to in a head, she uses an example in romantic relationships, but it's not just romantic relationships.
Yeah, because that is every relationship.
Right. It's friends. I think as we grow up in our families, when we start to have our own agency, then it becomes voluntary. And then we get to choose the family members we get to have relationships with. Because when we're young, we don't have that choice. We got to be around the people our parents bring us around, you know, friends, family, or whatever. We have to go to the school that our parents take us to, and we don't have to necessarily be in relation with those friends, you know, but it is a relationship because these are our classmates. These are our teachers. Even if it's not friendship, we don't get to choose a relationship. We might get to choose the type, but then you become an adult. And then, you know, that agency comes into play. And so it's like, okay, so now that we're choosing these relationships, what is, you know, we've already addressed the selfish nature of humans, you know, what is it? And when I read...
But is it really selfish, though? Is it really selfish, though?
I mean...
Or is it more survival? Because, you know...
But that's the thing. Again, I think it goes back to, I think people are operating in survival mode because of a lack of emotional intelligence to be able to give our bodies the proper context of what we're feeling. Because it's like, sensuality has changed everything for me, because it has put me in touch with my emotions. And as an Aquarius, y'all love to say that we unemotional, we just any other, I've worked on it. Okay. I know how to feel my emotions, damn it. But it has, because now I understand, especially coming from the church background, where everything in your flesh is demonized, anything dark is demonized, you know, even though we'll quote the scripture, be angry and sin not, we'll say that, but we don't, I have never been in any church that has taught you how to be angry and not sin. It really just ends up, you know, kind of sounding like you just shouldn't be angry. Because then it's like, oh, you're angry. Oh, you have a spirit of offense. What is a spirit of offense? If I'm offended, I'm just offended.
Which is okay, because we're human beings and
we have feelings.
We are allowed to feel a lot of different things. Now, granted, how we react to it is always the place that we get in trouble with. But if I'm angry, sad, upset, you know, which is one of the things that I had to learn, which it took me a long time to learn, was the fact that just because I felt these emotions didn't necessarily mean that I was a bad person. It just actually made me realize how much more human I am, and how if I could connect with those emotions and really understand where they're coming from, then I can almost create my own safe space, right? Because in this whole thing, talked about, you know, having the partner create that safe space or giving them the things that they need. But then it's like, well, are you already doing that for yourself, right? And if you're not, how am I then to come in and be the substitute to fill in those needs? And it's a hard thing to do, because there are just some things that some people have to figure out on their own, experience on their own, and you coming in to try to save them, in a sense, with those experiences, doesn't help them in the long run. So,
yeah, absolutely. Outsourcing that completely, it's the difference between being codependent and interdependent. And a lot of people either, I think in our society, I think a lot of people either run are the hyper independent or are very codependent. And because our culture really isn't kind of set up for us to be interdependent, and in being interdependent on each other and expecting, like, to say, you know, this is what I need, like not just a flimsy desire, which again, I think is, if you love me and we're in a relationship, even if it isn't a need, if you are able to meet that desire, I have a hard time understanding why you wouldn't.
But it all depends on what the desire, like, what is the cost of me creating that desire or fulfilling that desire for you? Because there may be a cost to me that you may not be aware about, right? And it may be the place that I need to go in order to be able to fulfill that desire. That's the hard part, right? Because part of it is emotional attachment or the emotional connection you have with somebody. So if I'm not much of an emotional person or have the emotional intelligence to understand how much this means to you, I mentally or emotionally may not even be able to get there. And then it just becomes a thing of, well, you know, I don't know how to do it, or I do these other things for you, so you should be happy.
But then I think that isn't what she's saying then, because then that means that you can't, like, having the capability. Like, I think you highlight a good point, because it's like, okay, well, I look at you and say, well, you're an able-bodied person. Why can't you give me that? But as much as you might, as much as you're, you know, you might be built to do it, if you've never been equipped to do it, then you really can't. But then I would say, okay, well, if you haven't been equipped and you don't know how, if you love me and you want to remain in connection to me, what are you willing to do to begin to give me what I'm asking for?
With the hope that you actually know what you want.
That, yeah. Right? And that's what I'm saying. If I'm saying, like, hey, babe, I really need you to tell me when you're going to be home late. Even if it's just that, if I'm being me, and normally, and this is, I know, is a trauma response, because I'll over explain. And this is normal for me. If I'm asking for something, I've always felt like, oh, I got to give them a reason so that they'll understand how important it is to me. And I'm learning that that's not necessarily bad per se, but on the flip side, if I shouldn't have to. And so normally I would go in to be like, you know, I really need you to tell me when you're going to be home late. Because, you know, I've had situations in the past where, you know, they wouldn't do that. And then something really bad happened, and it really scared me, and I didn't know what to do. So I just want to know that you're safe.
See, communicating it that way, if I didn't know anything at all, that helps me. I just need to know when you get home. You better call me, because, you know, it's like, you trying to keep track of me now? Like, you don't trust me?
You might be able to receive that. But a lot of men, even with me giving you, like, I just want to know that you're safe, they'll get triggered. They'll get triggered by, like, you ain't my mama. And I'm like, I'm not trying to be your mama, but damn it, like, have some accountability. Because if I was out late and I tell you and you was home, you'd be like, oh, who dick you sucking? Like, and I'm like, you know, and you are doing nothing. I just want to know that you all right. And hey, babe, I know it's midnight. I'm probably going to be home like 1:30. So I'm not jumping out the bed, grabbing my gun with somebody coming in my door, not realizing it's you, because I got trauma. Or wondering if you in the ditch, because I've had an ex who had a drinking problem, and he'll show up the next morning and be like, oh, I almost got arrested because I fell asleep.
Yeah, that's a you would hope that the more time you spend with someone, right? This is why it really is important to spend time with people to get to know them, because you can't run across those scenarios unless you have some level of vulnerability and you're choosing to really be open with that person and say, listen, you know, I sometimes come home late because my job has, like, you know, these crazy deadlines, and sometimes I gotta stay late, my schedule's a little erratic. Okay, whatever. But I think the issue really comes when trust is somehow impacted, right? So if I tell you that I'm gonna be home late, but you trust me, you're like, okay, no problem, thanks for letting me know. But if you don't trust me, and I tell you I'm gonna be home late, you start running scenarios in your head about, well, you know, Tuesday he said he was gonna come home, but this last Tuesday he didn't come home, and then maybe I saw his text. Did he wear cologne this today? Like, who is he dressing up for? And then that creates a whole bunch of scenarios, even though none of it is valid, right? None of it is valid. That already tells you where the relationship is at, right? And you may not want to voice that and say, listen, I'm kind of insecure about the fact of the way where we are right now because you did this. I have questions. And I may think, oh, we're good. You know, I told her she should be happy. But things are what they are. So,
it's so true. I think too many people are wanting to be in a relationship, but they don't want to take the risk. Like, I don't want to be alone. I want to be with somebody, but I'm not willing to take the risk of being vulnerable because you can hurt me. And that is true.
Yeah.
Because, no, that's true. You're in battle, you're vulnerable. But you also can't win the war either without vulnerability. You never step out on a battlefield, which is a very vulnerable place to be. You can never win.
It's not even just enough that you can never win, but sometimes you never even think the battle will ever end. And I can think of situations where I thought that I was being vulnerable and open and communicating and everything like that, but that was still not enough. Because that person wasn't in a place to receive it as such. And so then it makes me start to question myself and say, what am I doing wrong? Right? Even though I think I'm pulling a script that I should be pulling, a different reaction. So it really says a lot about people, how unique we are, and how different variables we go through in life can impact us, and how on the surface you think somebody is one way. But when you really get to know them, you realize things are a little bit different than I expected.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and I think too, even subconsciously, I think with some people it's subconscious. And it's subconscious because of the way that our society is, that you want the other person to be vulnerable, but you don't want to be vulnerable because the way that relationships have been constructed, you know, last two episodes mm-hmm. we were talking about misogyny. It's the idea of someone is supposed to be the one with power and it's gonna be me. And the only way I get to maintain that power and that control is if you give more than I give.
Which is a lot. Which is a lot to put on a person.
You give more than I give, and maybe I give a little, but I only give you enough to keep you on the hook until the next time, but never enough to really truly disarm myself. And then and then the other thing that came to me is realizing, like, again, on my journey to learn how to feel and be less of a cold, ice cold Aquarius. I had an epiphany. I was in a group therapy session last year for about 8 weeks. And, you know, I've gotten very comfortable with telling people about my abuse story. And I would tell people these really crazy, dark, terrible things with very minimal affect. And they'd be like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. Cause part of me is just like, oh, I'm out. I'm safe. You know, it's not that hard to tell because that's into my past. And then I realized, you know, I was doing that and I was doing individual therapy and, you know, TikTok be dropping gems and they were like, people were talking about feeling your feelings. Like, why do people keep saying that? What does that mean? Da, 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 da. And somebody was like, your feelings are actual sensations in your body. And too many of us are thinking our feelings and not actually feeling our feelings. And I was like, oh, that's what people mean when they say Aquariuses are cold and we don't have no emotions, because we as air signs, I know people like, y'all put too much on zodiacs, but whatever, for anybody. But we're very logical. And so when things go off, and even in my therapeutic journey, like, and I don't discount it, because it was very important for me to understand and the cognitive part of my therapy to really understand what was happening. But in that, I hadn't got to the place where I really allowed myself to feel the impact of what happened. And then when I'm telling my story to people, I'm thinking I'm being vulnerable because I'm telling them all this hard stuff that I went through, when really I was just being transparent. Because, and the vulnerability comes in actually telling them how it made me feel and not just what happened.
That is actually, the fact that you brought up the difference between vulnerability and transparency, right? Because for me, when I think of transparency, it means that I'm being upfront, honest, open, right? But when I think about vulnerability, there's always that feeling that something in this, right? I'm giving you a piece of myself that can be sometimes very difficult, and is not readily given to everybody and anybody, right? With the hope that in my moment of vulnerability, you'll see me in a light that maybe you've never seen before, right? And I'm hoping that you're going to take advantage of my vulnerability, and it actually be a moment to connect, because that's the hope, right? If you're vulnerable with someone, you're hoping that at the end of it, they either can become vulnerable themselves, or it creates a new bridge to connect. But if that's not happening, then you begin to even question, like, okay, maybe I can't be vulnerable with this person because of the result that I got, not knowing that sometimes vulnerability just one time doesn't mean that, you're going to get the result back. Sometimes you got to be vulnerable multiple times, but not just to put yourself out there, but to do so, I would almost say strategically in a way, right? Because we're not advocating for you just to be vulnerable to people and just start telling stuff and, okay, I'm ready to get hurt now. Yeah. Okay.
They gotta earn it. I guess. They gotta earn it.
they gotta earn it. It is, I would say, the privilege of being able to know someone, right? My family, who I love dearly, and my friends, there are some things that I only tell them because that's the privilege of being in my life in the way that you are, and you being someone I can trust. But if I don't trust you, then you're not able to enjoy that liberty, because we're just not there yet. And so then it comes back again to this whole idea of being loved and safe, right? If I don't feel safe, I'm not gonna be able to bring my full self. And that's okay, because in the beginning you're still kind of figuring people out. But eventually, at some point, there should be an alarm that says, "I've been with you for a minute now, and I don't feel like I'm able to be myself, or I can come to you, and that's a problem," right?
And I think it's important too, and you said it earlier, just to bring it back, is understanding that the first person who has a responsibility to make you feel safe, if you're an adult — this is an 18 plus podcast — but if you're an adult, the first person that has that responsibility is us. And having that foundation of safety within ourselves makes it easier and to understand and to understand safety around us and who is safe. And then, and also to be able to honor that safety versus taking advantage of it. Because a lot of people tell me how they feel safe with me, and they may struggle feeling safe within themselves, but they feel very, I'm not a judgmental person. I listen, I hold space. And so they can tell me their deepest, darkest things. And I'm not like, oh my God, which helps them to feel safe. And it's something that is, and a lot of times for some people, very foreign to them, And in some cases, it has meant that they take advantage of me. And in my disempowered state, because I'm just wanting to connect, I would allow that. In my more empowered state, I'm able to see it for what it is and set boundaries to protect myself, because my safety is paramount. And I can't allow anyone to infringe on my personal safety just because they want to kind of leech off of me. And so she actually goes on to really give a good example that her psych teacher did. So she said she had a psych teacher use our life experiences as an example for Pavlov's theory. So he asked the class, how many of you give your partners flowers? Lots of hands raised. How many of you give them a few times a year? Less hands. Monthly, barely any. Weekly, one hand. So he asked one question that had their hand up in the beginning and scoffed at the idea of doing it regularly, why he felt that way. Kid says, well, and she quotes, well, I don't want her to get used to it. Then she'll expect it. And when I don't do it, it'll be a problem. Mixed reviews from the audience. Professor, so flowers make your girlfriend feel loved. He nods his head. But you have a problem with her expecting to feel loved. Confused face. He then asks the one kid who does it weekly, and I quote, well, typically I get her flowers on my way home, and when I notice they started to go bad, I'll get more. Professor, why? Kid, it makes her happy. Professor, is it hard to remember? Kid, nah, it's pretty much routine at this point. He says he's been doing it for 2 years, and even if he takes longer to replace them, it's never caused an issue. I think about that class often when I see how people in relationships love each other. Why are you voluntarily entering into a situation you do not want to be responsible for? If you don't care to meet someone's expectations for loyalty, if you don't care to learn your partner's love language, what logical reason is there? A love where your main focus is receiving and not giving is not love at all. Sometimes it's based on our own trauma and disappointments that don't allow us to love in a way that is truly transformative. And that is unfortunate, but that is the work. The work is getting to a place in love where your presence is an offering, a gift. You bring joy, not pain. Many of us did not have positive examples of love growing up and in the world. So I know at times the action of love seems undefinable, but it is not just a feeling.
Wow. Drop the mic.
Right. Right. We could have already. Thank you for coming.
You, exactly.
So,
yeah.
See you next week.
Over. That's over.
But it's funny. I'm not going to stop there, because obviously because of the example, and it's a woman who's writing the tweet, and he's using this example about men giving flowers to their girlfriend. And it's really easy for us as women, I'm going to talk for the ladies, for us to point out when men do that and really go in on what we don't get, and, oh, they cheaters, they this and the other. And that's real. I've been cheated on, unfortunately, in every relationship that I've been in, starting with my very first one and ending with the very last one. And that does something to you, to constantly be in relationships and people telling you that they're going to do this and they love you and they're loyal to you. And either they had the intention or they never did, but clearly whether their intention was to be that way or not, at the end of the day, they did not hold their commitment. But we ladies do it too. We do it too.
It almost reminds me of Valentine's Day, which is a holiday that I'm just not a big fan of. Not because of what it symbolizes. But I think about the fact that a holiday where there are some individuals who basically just do what they need to do to appease that person for the time being, right? And that's what I think about the flowers. I think that the flowers become the thing that, you know, let me do it for you for now, but don't get used to it, because it was just to keep you happy for now. And there's also the accountability behind it, right? Because the guy who's picking it up every day, he's genuinely doing it, not expecting anything out of it, right? He just knows that, hey, it makes her smile. She likes it. no big deal. He's not even reading into it, right? Versus the other person who's like, well, if I get her flowers, is she going to start thinking that she should always get flowers and maybe she doesn't like it? Like, you're almost overthinking about the whole process and not realizing that. Just live in the present. Like, if you get a flowers today, great. If you get a flowers tomorrow, awesome. But if you don't get them the third day, that's okay. Like, you know, and I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to really make our partners happy, when in reality, happy shouldn't be the goal. You know, happy, I think happy comes as a byproduct of being with that person, connecting with that person, enjoying moments with that person, right? So I don't fabricate happy as a, I made you happy. No, you were happy or are happy because of all these things. So I think that it's easy sometimes, especially for guys, you know, to think that as long as I do these things, you should be happy. You should feel loved. You should feel safe. I can check off my box and keep it moving. But we all know that that isn't always the case. And next thing you know, there's like this silent argument that nobody even has in their heads. Going back
and forth. And the funny thing is the way that I hear his response, that is, it doesn't even, you know, it just highlights the way we communicate. Because from a man's perspective, he's like, oh, he feels a lot of pressure. He's putting too much pressure on himself. And for me, what it sounds like is, oh, he just wants to maintain power. That whole idea of, oh, I don't want her getting used to it. It's like that sounds like a power trip, because it's like, what, like you said, what happens if she gets used to it? If she feels love and she gets used to feeling love, what's the problem with that?
But we're not going to equate it as being love. See, see, that's the thing. I'm not going to equate me getting you flowers as the thing that makes you feel love. I'm going to think that other things that I do that I've established as being acts of love are what work, right? So there's already a kind of like a discontinuity between my expectations, your expectations, that middle point or that meeting point, and still being bold enough to say, listen, I know you got me flowers the last 2 days, but it's okay if you don't get me the third day. Like, I know that you love me, and, you know, but no, they're not going to say that. They're going to wait till the flowers don't come. And then it's going to be like, well, I see you getting no flowers today.
One, you know, obviously flowers are the example, but, you know, it could be it could be, you know, ice from Chick-fil-A because they got the little nuggets, you know, whatever the case might be. And it's like, and understanding, you know, the idea of why wouldn't you, it's not that that's the totality of her feeling loved. It's one of the things, one of the bricks, so to speak, in feeling love. But if that is, it is one thing, and you're just, it's not that you're not doing it because you didn't think about it, but literally it's like you're intentionally not doing it often because you don't want her to get used to it. Like, that is selfish.
I'll give you that.
That is selfish. But again, you know, it was my point in bringing that up. Like, when you're talking, I was like, well, if we flip this, because, you know,
I was going to say that too.
Most men aren't really caring about flowers. If the reverse of that in my head was like, it's head. And yeah. I literally asked a question. There was like, somebody posted like the 10 commandments of giving head. And so I asked a question in my stories. And if you don't follow me, my name is on the screen. I'm Lucilenia. And it goes down in the stories. That's where all the juicy stuff be going. And so I asked the question, like, because I don't have a dick. I don't know how it feels. I know I like giving head. But I'm like, is this everything? Like, are these commandments sufficient? Is there something missing? And someone responded and was like, yeah, the actual desire to do it. And I was like,
yes.
But you're right. That's
a no.
Key. That's a major key. And I know, because I literally had a conversation with a wife, with a woman who is married, who does not like doing it, but does it. And she swears to me, and to the group of ladies who were at dinner, she sweared to all of us that he did would not know the difference. And I'm like, baby, I don't have a dick.
He knows the difference.
But I've talked to enough men to know they know the difference. He'll accept it. He ain't gonna tell you not to suck his dick.
Yeah.
But he knows the difference between you loving sucking his dick and you just doing it because you don't want nobody else to do it, essentially. Because that's how it was given. Like, that whole idea was, if I don't do it, somebody else will. And so I do it even though I don't like it. And I'm like, but again, and
it's like doing somebody a favor.
I want to make this disclaimer. because I know that there are people that there's very real trauma for some of us connected to doing certain things sexually or otherwise. And that's where, you know, we talked about earlier, like you got to, that's, you know, the relationship, the conversation, the vulnerability to be able to get to that place that it's like, yeah, but again, this is not, I don't think this is not what she's saying. Because she's not talking about those things that are taking something from you. Whether it's whether it costs too much financially or it just costs too much to your soul to do. That I don't think that's what she's talking about. If it's not costing you that much, then why? Like, what, lady, why? What is the whole, what is the hang up? And that's the stuff that's the work that we got to do for us, that you're in a relationship with a man. This, you know, disclaimer, I'm talking about cishet relationships. I know that there are others, but that's what I know. That this man wants head, and you'll treat it like, you'll give it back. Maybe on BJ Day, March 14th, if y'all didn't know, Valentine's Day for us, March 14th is taking BJ Day.
Let me make sure everybody does that.
You know, for my dudes that love to suck dick too, Steak and BJ Day is their day. And so you do it on the special occasions. You do it enough, but you don't want him to get used to it, because then he gonna expect it. And you don't want him to expect it. And it is selfish, because what is it taking? Now again, he shouldn't be forcing you. This, you know, I'm not saying do it begrudgingly. But what is it in you? What is coded in you that, because there are men out there, like there are a lot of men who will try to force you, push your head down. But there are a lot of men mm-hmm. who are being denied that kind of love, that kind of pleasure, and are not going to force you, are not going to shame you. They're just going to do without.
Nope.
And to not receive in a way that you want to receive, same thing. Like for us women, if we in a relationship and we like getting head, and the man's like, I'm not eating you out. But he expects, like, it's wrong. And so, you know, the whole flower thing, that's why I was like, ah, if there's an equal and opposite kind of thing for dudes, mm-hmm. it'd be giving head.
And I would definitely reiterate the fact that we know the difference.
Just so you know, mic drop. it is you know it is done.
We know the difference. Lie to yourself. He just doesn't say anything. Not sure.
Awesome. I mean, without going too far on a tangent, I don't understand. I don't think I want to understand truly how people are not turned on by pleasing their partner. Like, the power trip for me is that I'm the one giving you the pleasure. And for that, I love it. And I'm just not coded that way. I'm not a pillow princess. And I think, you know, if I'm gonna go there. Cause it's something I say a lot. I think a lot of women, not all women, yes, there are a lot of men who are selfish and self-centered and be like, I got my nut and I'm gone. But I think in a lot of ways we can enable that, because too many women do not own their sexuality. And because they don't take ownership of it, they don't take ownership of their pleasure. They literally hand it.
I'm gonna say, yeah.
And if he's good, he's good, and I get some. If he's not, he's not. And if I like him, I'm just gonna deal with it, or you know, I'll just give him some when he really, really asks. A whole lot of times, and I can't give him excuses, but it's not really good, and it's really because a lot of it really is because you're lazy.
Well, that, and it could be that, and it could also be the fact that I don't want to let you know that I really don't know what I'm doing, right? Like, I'm, you know, and I'd rather give you this persona of confidence, right, than be honest and say, listen, you know, I know what's worked in the past, but, like, or didn't. And this was even.
And that's on both sides. So hold on. That's on both sides.
Yeah.
I think men and women do the same thing, because I think with women, those of us who have vaginas, we've been told our vagina is so amazing that him getting the access pass to our vagina is enough. You inside. You got your ticket punched, and that is enough. This is for the churchy. Like, we have been, even religiously, we have made a girl's virginity, like, this is your treasure. Don't give this to just anybody. This, any other. And it's like, and so you do give it, and then it's like, oh. And it's like anticlimactic, not because it isn't a treasure, but because we built it up to be this thing. And it's like, baby girl, baby boy, there are plenty of people who got what you got. And sorry to tell you, I mean, yeah, my pussy good. It's good. Like that good that he can't find somebody else. She can't find somebody else. They can't find somebody else that got good pussy. Like that.
Well, but that's so for the person that is comfortable in their sensuality. There's also the person who is comfortable in being sexualized in a way, because being anything other than that is traumatic in a way. And when you talk about power, I mean, see, I'm not surprised you've seen this power. I'm just not. Like, I know in your head, I know how you work.
You are my brother.
But there are a lot of women who don't see that as being empowering. Right, they, for whatever reason, the associations that you have with it, and again, it still goes back to the idea that I communicate the why, right? Because if not, if I don't communicate the why, I'm just gonna assume that you're gonna come up with a reason in your head, and then we're gonna shake hands and we're good. You know, this conversation about what you like and what I don't like, figure it out. Because sexuality, being connected with somebody physically, emotionally, is not something you have to figure out, right? I mean, yes, there's some things you do, but there's a lot of opportunities to say, hey, listen, I know you think, like, kissing my neck works. It does nothing for me. I'm just letting you know. Like, you thought you were doing something, but it doesn't. I usually do this instead. And, you know, for the guy, it depends. He might see it as, and might see it as a hit to his ego, or he might say, all right, cool, I'm good. Well, but then he might come back and say,
in that moment right there, so as Black women, we're getting hit on all sides, because we're at the intersectionality of being Black and being women. And as Black women, we are hypersexualized, not just by the church, but by society in general. So wherever we go, however we enter it, and we're being taught that that's a bad thing, that we're being treated as commodities, we're being treated as bodies just to be used and abused. And the problem with that is that we're being told that it's our fault because of our bodies. As a Latina woman, there's an added thing on there for me too, because Latina women, you know, people love to make it thing like this, that stereotype is something that is great, but we are also very sexualized and where this is any other blah blah blah. And so growing up for me as a light-skinned Black woman who was Latina, who grew up in church, I understand why women have a hard time owning their sexuality. So I'm not shaming you for what you've been through, but I am holding you responsible for choosing. Remember what she said in the beginning, we're choosing to voluntarily be in those relationships and not putting forth the intention and the work to be able to show up in a healthy way. Now that also means that Black men and white men and other men who choose to be in relationships, because they're also getting the same messaging about us too. And that's impacting them and how they treat us and how they respect or not respect or honor and not honor us, because they've also been told that a woman who does that isn't worthy of those things either. And then that's where my next point comes in. Because if you get to the place where you are starting to be comfortable with owning your sexuality and working on that communication in the bedroom and out of the bedroom, because now you own it, you know what you want, or you're willing to explore the things, and you're willing to communicate when it doesn't work for you and when it does. And when it doesn't work for you, and his response is, whatever, that is where you draw a boundary. You stop showing up to places with people who will not honor you when you say, this is what I don't like that. This doesn't make me feel good, but if you kiss right here, you suck on my nipple, that is fire. Your neck, I don't like that.
I'm taking notes.
Now, of course, you know, be a little sexy with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
You know, you just, whatever.
Don't like that. I'm grinding.
Even if you, you know, you're not, don't be yelling at him, like, unless that's what y'all might consent to verbal abuse in the bed. Hey, people get off on what they do, what they get off on. But, you know, like, if you're communicating that to him in a way that is appropriate for the situation and respectful in a way that y'all have both agreed on, or she or whatever, or they, and they're just completely resistant, then that is a red flag. And if you're married, I'm not married, I feel for you. I'm not going to tell you go run and get a divorce, but some intervention of some kind likely needs to happen. Because one thing that I've learned as an unmarried person, but someone who's had, you know, very intimate relationships, is that often our lives in our bedroom and our sex lives is often is very much a reflection of what's happening outside of our sex life. And so if you're trying to communicate those things, to have that kind of to own your sexuality, because to be honest, men, let me tell my brother something. When she enjoys it, it's better for you. So you want her to enjoy it. You want to do the things that gets her off. And yes, she can say, she should and can say it, but also, like, learn her body. Pay attention. Like, it's a dance. It's a very beautiful thing, you know, that if you watch the, like, dancers and how they move, and I love watching, like, freestyle ballroom, because I'm like, and they like pick random dancers that aren't really partnered, and yet somehow, mm-hmm. because they understand the language of dance, they're able to dance so seamlessly with each other as if they had been dancing forever. But they understand, you know, from the outside looking in, it's two things happening. They know how to read each other's body, but they're also communicating to each other verbally sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they're able to be in step with each other, with the music, with the flow, and they look like one. And that, to me, and that's why I talk about sex and sensuality, because to me it is one of the most beautiful God-given examples of what an intimate relationship is supposed to be, which is divine union. And when we can get so in step with each other, like, if you've ever had sex with someone, whatever relationship, but you've had that moment, that mind-blowing moment, that's like, how do, like, they just know, we just know our bodies and each other's bodies so well that you just kind of, like, you're like this. It's just
mm-hmm.
so yeah. in sync. And to not just have sex that way, but to have intimate relationships that way, like, that, to me, I think that is what God designed it for. Because ultimately, like, that's, like, it is how we are supposed to be with God. Like, we are so connected to our higher self. There is no disconnection. Mm-hmm. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. And if our relationships are supposed to be a reflection of God's love, then our sex, our platonic, like, all of that is just a mirror of what we are supposed to be experiencing. It's all spiritual. And so I know, there are more and more people, especially Black women, talking about sexuality and spirituality, and I love it. One of the things that I've had to own, though, for me, is that I don't just talk about it. Everybody has to represent sexuality in their way. But I own the fact that the way that I represent sex, it's very, very spicy. It's very, very, unfortunately, stereotypes are built on truth. Like, that Latina spicy,
yeah,
I
got yeah.
it. I'm it. And I'm so comfortable in my body But yeah, I understand that when I post a picture in my lingerie and you see my nipples, like, oh my God. And I understand that that's sexy, but I also understand that my nipples are not inherently sexual. And that's why I do those things, because I'm really trying to challenge you. And you're exposed. A lot of y'all church people don't realize how much you expose yourselves. You don't realize how you expose yourself, that when you're looking at me and you're so, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, the problem is that you're attracted to my nipples. You attracted the fact that I'm showing my ass. You like it. And instead of that, you want to make me the problem. And I'm not.
Listen, just give them your Cash App and, you know.
They get to your tips. Cash App on the screen. You want some of your offerings? You know, go ahead and pass the plate around. Go ahead. We like the one that fold versus the one that drinks.
But you know, that for me brings up the point of there are some men who feel the pressure of being able to satisfy, you know, their partner, you know, in a way that actually creates a level of anxiety and physically and mentally, right? So you're going in thinking like, I gotta make this happen. And pressure on yourself is something that I don't think a lot of guys realize really hurts them. And it's way beyond just the fact of her being able to climax or come or whatever it may be. It's more about the fact that as important in this moment, and I'm not the sole responsibility for our pleasure, right? There's it's me and you. And sometimes it's a hard bridge to gap. Because then at that point you realize that, you know what? If I'm honest with myself, I realize how much I am sexualized. I realize how much I think or believe that I should be the author and the giver and not the receiver, right? That this is a job that I got to do and do it well. And if she's happy, she's happy. But then not realizing that, like, at what point are you happy? Right? You know, that is in some ways traumatic in and of itself, because now you're starting to associate intimacy with the anxiety, the stress of trying to meet that high expectation. When it's like, listen, just be yourself. But nobody really talks about that for guys, right? Yeah. You know, and we laugh about like shows or comments when it's like, well, that dude is packing, right? Like, he's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, not realizing that the guys who are, you know, they have to wrap their mind around the fact that I'm still important, still valued, and I can still do and enjoy myself. But nobody talks about that. It's always about, you know, sweatpants season, you know what I mean? And, you know, for that guy who's like, yo, you ain't seen nothing in my sweatpants.
You know, so let me say this. I'm gonna represent the ladies on this one, okay? Because yes, I'm not gonna gaslight you, because we absolutely do that. And anytime the monster is like there, we are like, girl. I was like, but let the majority of the women that I know, I don't know all of the ladies in the world, but the majority of women that I know, like, we like to look at those. We like to have the other ones. That's not realistic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so,
yeah.
But I think it highlights something when you were talking about, you know, just the relationships and, you know, and the pressure that you all men feel. I think both of those things, it highlight one really key thing, which I think is another thing that women do and can do and often do to also maintain our own version of power. And we don't want him to get used to it. We don't want him to get comfortable, is that we withhold praising you for what you do and what you do well and how you do make us feel. Because that's our own version of being like, nope, I can't let him know, because the moment I let him know, he's gonna stop. And not that we are completely responsible for a man's self-worth and self-esteem, but we definitely can add on to his low self-esteem and low self-worth.
Yes. Yeah.
Because especially, I'm like, the woman that you love and all you ever hear from her is what you do wrong or what you don't do at all.
Mm-hmm.
and you never hear, you know, and that's where, again, that both sides have to play a role, because like, he got to be willing to say it, he got to be willing to receive it, he got to hear it. And that also comes with a certain level of healthy self-esteem, because I know for me, like, and I say this because it's, I think it's an example that people can understand, but most people look at me dumb when I say this. I was always told that I was pretty growing up. I was always told that I could sing growing up. I know I'm gorgeous now, and I know I can sing. I was on my story singing earlier. Growing up, though, it didn't matter who said it. I didn't believe it for myself. So although I had people affirming me in both of those areas, I sang in choirs, I sang on praise teams. So I knew that I could carry a tune. Knew I wasn't like terrible. I knew I wasn't like ugly, but I didn't fully believe just how beautiful I was or just how talented I was. I never really allowed myself to. And again, no matter how anyone affirmed me, I would always excuse it away in some way. Oh, whatever, you're just saying it. Oh, no, I'm not. Well, okay, whatever, but I'm not as good as that person. Like, it was a lot of comparison. It was really just not the inability to really accept it for what it was saying, was because their affirmation, their compliment, was not reflecting anything that I believed about myself. And now I'm able to accept the compliments and the affirmations because they're just reflecting back to me what I already know and believe. And so, you know, and so I bring that up to say, yeah, we absolutely have to definitely check ourselves if we are withholding praise and affirmation and compliments to our partner as a means of holding power. Because again, that's still something. Yeah. Our partner needs this to feel loved, and it's not robbing us of anything that is going to harm us. Then why are we holding on to that? And honestly, I think the reason why, when all the other things are taken out of consideration, and it's just a power and control thing, that we want to be in relationships, but we don't want to relinquish control. We don't want to truly be vulnerable because we don't want to be hurt. And I'm gonna end with this, and then you can give your final thoughts. Mm-hmm. And this is probably gonna sound harsh. I don't care. If this is you, and you are so hurt and so traumatized that you are unable to arrive at any level of vulnerability, and or don't have any desire to be vulnerable, but you want to be in a relationship, you're choosing to voluntarily be in a relationship, go take your ass to therapy, and stop dragging somebody else through your trauma. That's not fair. That's not fair. Yeah. It is not fair. Relationships. I'm gonna say this, and I know people will be like, "What?" You know, I don't like. We don't have to be in romantic relationships. We all deserve. We are all worthy of love. I'm not. I hate that whole idea of you gotta love yourself before somebody else can love you. I don't believe that.
I hate that too.
I hate that so much. So that's not what I'm saying. But romantic relationships aren't the only way to feel loved. Intimate relationships are not the only way to feel loved. There's all kind of love. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't desire to be in a romantic relationship. But if you desire to be in one, and you don't want to do the work so that you can show up in a healthy way and love that person the way that they are worthy of being loved, and then understanding that if you're not able to, then you're also likely not able to really truly receive love either. Go get
some. And that's the hard part. So my last thoughts on this are just the fact that if you're a guy, and you know, especially growing up in the church, you feel a lot of pressure. You feel like you don't have a lot of people to talk to about it. Find somebody, you know. And I know it sounds like easier said than done. But if nothing else, communicate with your partner. Let them know, like, yo, like, I love the time that we spent together. But sometimes I feel like it's a lot for me. And I know that the times when I've had the hardest conversations have been the times when I've had breakthroughs. It's when I withhold and keep it inside and don't say anything, hoping that you just figure it out. Things never change. So if you're looking for change, be honest. If you see this being someone you want to be with for a really long time, well, you better start now, because it ain't gonna get easy over time. So that's probably the one advice I would always say is just try to be honest and open about what you're experiencing and what you're going through. It doesn't sound great in your head, but that's okay, because the person you're with does the same exact thing, and you most times will probably accept them, love them, reaffirm them, and you are worthy of getting the same kind of thing. So,
hell, amen, Ashe.
Yes,
take
yes,
some
yes.
deep breaths. Another, I had fun. That was great for me.
Oh,
thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening in, commenting, sharing, liking, reviewing on all of the places where pods are casted. Look forward to another episode next week. And as always, be as radiant as the sun. Bye.
Bye-bye.